Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Back to the show, team. My name's Amelia. And today, I'm doing a bit of a different episode. It's just me. I was going to be doing a bit of a reflection on the last couple of years, but it's been an interesting couple of weeks, and so I just thought I'd get you all up to speed with what's been going on. So, firstly, it's currently National Science Week, which means it is the third anniversary of Avid Research, which is awesome. So that's three whole years of Avid Research interviews, talking to awesome people, sharing them with you. It's been pretty cool. It's been pretty impossible when I started out to imagine how things would get to where they are now. Yeah, it's quite awesome what's happened and some of the people that I've got to speak to. So, yay, celebrating 3 years for starters. High five me. That was the sound of me high-fiving myself. So, yeah, like quite a few years, what I learned, all sorts of things. And yeah, I made some reels a while back that I've been putting out, little videos of things that I learned over the years of what things a STEM career can include, which is almost anything. And common things like it's totally okay not to know what you want to do with your life, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I guess it's nice to celebrate the 3 years. But something that I wanted to share with everyone, because I feel like it's quite relevant, is over the last couple of weeks, I've had a very interesting last couple of weeks. And whilst this isn't career related, I do believe it is STEM related, more specifically medicine. So at the beginning of August, I got some blood tests done to check out a couple of odd symptoms that I had going on. And, you know, as you do go into the doctor, you're like, I have these things. And they're like, oh, yes, well, it could be, you know, they never actually tell you what it could be, but they ask you questions. And if you've read enough, or, you know, put two and two together enough, you can sort of guess what they might be thinking it could be. And you go off and you get your blood tests, which in my case turned into a little bit of a saga because, of course, the electricity was out on the day that I wanted to get the blood test done. It turns out they can't draw blood. Well, I think they could still draw the blood, but they couldn't have documented it properly without electricity. So that's always fun when you've been fasting overnight to do your testing. So anyhow, went off, got the blood test done, went out for work and things, and got a phone call where the receptionist called me dull and love. And in my head, that is never a good thing. If the receptionist is giving you like pet sweet names, it's going to be terrible news. So when I was booked in to see the doctor, I was obviously convinced that I was going to have like 2 weeks left to live or something like that. Anyhow, no, that wasn't the case, which is awesome. Yay. But I did get diagnosed with incredibly high blood sugar, which is interesting because there's really only one thing that like I was ever made aware of that could be. So probably to rewind a little bit and give a bit more context, you're like, what were the symptoms? So for me, the symptom that actually resulted in me going to the doctor was significant weight loss in the sort of tens of kilos. And it took me a while to realize that that was happening for quite a while. I was just blaming modern clothing and just that like elastic doesn't work anymore. Anyhow, no, it wasn't the modern clothing, although modern clothing is often rubbish. It was me losing bits of me. I'm getting skinnier, which, you know, on a slightly tangential note, was quite frustrating, actually, having your clothes falling down. Very, very annoying and quite expensive as well, having to buy new clothes and worry about fast fashion and that sort of thing. Anyhow, so that was the reason that I went to the doctor. Obviously, that is a symptom that could be a symptom of, like, anything, and really nothing good. Mostly. Yeah. It turns out that I also had other symptoms that I had just written off as being someone in their mid-30s. I was like, meh, that's just like how life is like, you know, my eyes are fuzzy after 8 p.m. Of course, that's just like me working too much at the computer and being tired. No, it turns out that's not the case. Getting cramps in your legs at night, it turns out that can be a symptom of things. There's a whole lot of things that turn out they're symptoms. I had always drunk a lot of water, so I just sort of had forgotten that that was unusual. But it turns out that's a symptom as well. So you're sitting there, hopefully, on the edge of your seat. I'm trying to build up the suspense. What is this mystery thing? So really high blood sugar is an indicator of diabetes. Obviously, this isn't the thing that I was expecting to be diagnosed with. In fairness, I don't think that anyone's ever really expecting to be diagnosed with anything. But yeah, so I went in. My fasting blood sugars had been 18 when we did like a finger prick blood test at the doctor's. They were like 24 or something. And the doctor was like, not. She really didn't want to deliver any bad news and was sort of like beating around the bush. I was like you kind of have to go to emergency like right now. And I was like, but I feel fine. You should really only go to emergency if you feel sick. Surely you break something. So feeling still relatively normal and fine, got taken with a sent with a bunch of paperwork off to emergency where I got whisked away and blood tested again and managed to hit 34 on my blood sugars, which made the nurse do that sort of like noise, which you don't want to hear a medical professional make. Again, still feeling perfectly like I had been for the last 6 months, really, you know, mild level of background anxiety, but I think that's quite reasonable since I'd never really been to emergency before. Anyhow, so then got triaged and put very high up the triage list, which was unsettling. And yeah, then got to spend the next 2 days in hospital. So the reason I'm sort of like sharing this is because I think it's fascinating, and diabetes has now become my new like deep focus kind of nerd thing that I've been, you know, doing a bit of research into and learning a lot about because it's part of my life for forever now. There was, I guess they couldn't be certain for quite a while. Well, all the time I was in hospital, they couldn't be certain what had caused it, just that I was diabetic. Yeah, they couldn't detect whether or not it was type 1 or type 2 or, I guess, one other, as it turns out, many other variants of diabetes. But the other reason that, like, I wanted to make this podcast is I think it's important that people are aware of, you know, different conditions that can affect people. And also just sort of as a reminder to listen to your body. And if your body changes significantly or is really uncomfortable in like certain ways for like longer periods of time, you don't necessarily need to write that off as being, I'm over 30, that's just how things are. It is like worth going and getting checked out. Like, I know there's a lot of campaigns of like, you know, specific to type 1 diabetes or specific to type 2 diabetes or specific to specific types of cancer. Like, that's all well and good, but a lot of the symptoms are shared, and it's more, I think, important that if you do notice things changing or something feels odd, that it's worth going getting checked out. Because whilst there is this horrible period of time between getting that phone call of like, please come in, doll, and actually like sitting down with the doctor and them, you know, mustering the courage to tell you the news, and that period of time of unknowing and being absolutely convinced that you're about to drop dead is really scary, and that's totally reasonable. It's also still better to know in the end, like, for you and also for the people around you, and especially if it turns out it's nothing, because that's the best. Anyhow, so while I was in hospital, there was no way of telling whether or not it was type 1 or type 2 or one of the other types over my time chatting with the various doctors, endocrinologist, etc. They narrowed it down and were like 95% sure that I was a type 1, which, like, I guess is nice, but you really want confirmation. Yeah, it's helpful to have an actual diagnosis, and in this case that took about a week. Apparently those lab results take a while. So as well as having really high blood sugar, I also had ketones present in my blood. And since then, I've had it just described to me as that's basically an indicator that my cells were burning dirty fuel. So instead of burning like sugars, which is what they like to burn and makes them happy and means that they're working well, they were burning fats and proteins. And whilst that can sort of work in a short-term kind of solution, it's just like burning brown coal. It doesn't work long-term and it makes things grubby. And so the grubbiness in this case was ketones, which are things that build up in your blood. And so they had to get flushed out with a drip, which was fine. Yeah, but ketones are a thing. And cells can run on different fuels, but to different levels of happiness, as it turns out. So since then, I've been diagnosed as definitely a type 1 diabetic. There were specific markers in my blood, which were way beyond what was necessary for a diagnosis. No one said to me that I should have picked it up earlier, which is nice, but I suspect I possibly could have picked it up earlier if I'd been paying just a little bit more attention. But at the moment, it doesn't look like any long-term damage was done. Long-term, particularly if you've got the ketones floating around, they're acidic, and that is not good for really any of you. But there's bits of you that are specifically it's bad for, including your eyes, all of your organs, and the nerve that runs down to your feet. I know, all of these fun facts. So you might be like, well, we're having a podcast about diabetes. Where's the diabetes researcher? Yes, I know. I will find them. Don't worry. But what is the difference between type 1 and type 2? And aside from like all the medical people giving me little lectures over the last little while, we also put that into ChatGPT. And ChatGPT actually did a really good job. So diabetes type 1 and type 2 are actually completely different in their root causes. The result, to some extent, can be the same. You get the ketones in your blood, you get acidic, and bits of you sort of can start, you know, shutting down. But the root causes of them are totally different. Type 1, my type, it's an autoimmune disorder, which I don't think I'd really realized. So basically, my immune system went rogue, as they seem to do in quite a few people, and attacked the cells in my pancreas that produce insulin. I don't know why my immune system did that. It seems unnecessary. And also just like, I don't know, and I haven't asked anyone, but like, do those cells that were in the pancreas, that were in my pancreas, I assume, I don't know if they're still there, but like, did they look like something else out there, or did my immune system just get it like super wrong? There's so many questions, obviously, that I still need to ask people. But yeah, and so as a result of that, my body can no longer produce insulin, and insulin is required to get the energy from your blood, particularly the sugars, and get it into the cells. Again, I'll need to find a researcher to be able to describe that better than me, because currently it's only been described to me using a whiteboard, and that's really hard to do verbally. So my body no longer produces like one of the core things that's necessary for living. And so we have to source it elsewhere. Type 2 diabetes is a different beast. It's the way more common beast. So 90% or so of people with diabetes are type 2. And that is a metabolic disorder. So that's as a result of decades of living certain ways, eating certain ways, and like living in a society that sort of, it's where it's really, really hard basically not to end up with diabetes. So yeah, totally different beast. Your body's still producing insulin though, but that might need to be boosted from external sources. There's also a bunch of other types of diabetes, like if things can happen to your pancreas and that sort of stuff. And I assume if your pancreas was removed, I'm not sure if you can live without your pancreas, because it turns out producing insulin is not the only thing your pancreas does. But yes, so for me, I need to get my insulin from elsewhere. Currently, that comes in the form of like injectable pens, which are very nifty, and you can sort of like set doses very easily and then inject yourself with like teeny, teeny, tiny needles that are, as I've been describing to people, like being in control of a very small mosquito. They're really not too painful at all, which was nice. That was the thing that I honestly didn't think I would actually be able to do, is inject myself with insulin. And it turns out if it's that or all of the terrible side effects, chose the injecting the life-saving fluid. So I'm on two different types of insulin. There's a basal, which is once a day, and that's just sort of like your background survival insulin that just sort of like ticks away and makes sure that your cells are able to access energy all the time. And then a rapid acting one, which is where it gets like really complicated with matching the amount of insulin that you have before a meal with the amount of carbohydrates that are in a meal. And I'm at the very, very beginning of that learning journey of learning how much insulin and how many carbohydrates are in things. And I've got it wrong in both directions and ended up with low blood sugar and ended up with high blood sugar. And yeah, it's essentially the whole thing at the moment is like being a scientist back in the day, where you're like, no one can tell you how much, like what your ratio of insulin to carbohydrates is. No one can tell you how your body is going to respond to insulin and caffeine in the mornings or in the afternoons, or if your body is going to need more insulin in the mornings, all these sorts of things. So it just feels like I'm constantly needing to run experiments on myself, obviously document all the findings and do them a couple of times because things change between the days. So I do feel like one of those scientists back in the days where you're like, I wonder what my body does if I do this, and do the thing and then write it down. Although I'm not going to get any sort of like famous papers out of this, unfortunately. But I do get to, you know, have a bunch of data points about myself. So one of the things, like the thing that you can, or I guess the two things that you can measure empirically, your blood glucose levels. And that's what I mentioned earlier, were like really high. Oh, so for reference, so I was like sitting at a 34 or whatever, and you hear the nurse go, whoo. And so sort of healthy is sort of 4 to 6, 4 to 8. So quite a lot lower. Yeah. But so measuring blood glucose levels most accurately, that's done with like the finger prick test, where you prick your finger with something called a lancet. I assume it's kind of like, so it's a small lance, and yeah, create like a little nice little balloon of blood on your finger that you then dip your testing strip into. And that's great for like a single snapshot in time kind of thing. And the first piece of technology that I've got that's related to this illness is what a continuous glucose monitor, CGM. And that is a sensor with a cannula, so like a little needly thing that is sort of about the size of a 20 cent coin that is attached to my underarm. And it can ping my phone and I can see constantly what my blood, or a proxy for my blood glucose, which is really fascinating and like any number, kind of addictive. But yeah, so you need to you know, not get too addicted to checking your glucose because that's obviously not healthy. But yeah, so that's sort of the main piece of technology I have at the moment. And then I can use that to understand a bit of how different volumes of insulin are interacting with different types of foods and how over time we can get my blood glucose levels down to like a healthy level where hopefully I won't be doing ongoing damage to myself. And yeah, where I sort of feel energized and healthy, I guess. Yeah, and I'm also like safe and not too low. So as I said, like going too high is bad, and that is bad like long term. So having high blood sugar over extended periods of time, ketones, acidity, badness. There's also, of course, the joy of going too low. And that's more of the immediate danger zone where going too low can result in unconsciousness and then no more. And so it's riding a constant line between lowness and highness, which is kind of like being on a seesaw on a tightrope, I would say. But also I'm only like 2.5 weeks in, so still dealing with a lot of new things. There's been a whole lot of like fun facts, a lot of them related to food. And one of the ones that I found most fascinating, and I'm going to like force on other people, possibly anyone who stands still long enough, is that different rices have different like carbohydrate levels, but also interact in your body differently, right? So overall, the diet that is desirable for a person with diabetes is what they're referring to as just like generic healthy eating, right? And that's kind of true, but it's also kind of not true. My understanding is that you really want to focus on low GI foods, so glycemic index. You don't want to peak. You don't want to spike after a meal and then drop back down. That drop back down is really unpleasant, as is the rise, as it turns out. You want to have that sort of like nice slow burn of the food through your system. And all carbohydrates do that differently, like obviously sugar. So like a lolly snake, really easy to digest, results in a spike of sugar, which is great if you're low, but it's not great just like day to day. Whereas oats like have a nice slow burn. So important to note, like people with type 1, it's not that they can't eat things. It's better to do it either in moderation, just like it is for everybody, or to pair specific foods with each other so that you can like lower the GI of cake by having it with yogurt or something, for example, so that you don't get the spikes, which are not good for your health, but they're also just like uncomfortable as a person. But rice is fascinating because you think, well, brown rice is good. No. Unfortunately, you're not correct. So short grain rices like arborio, like in a risotto, or a sushi rice, they're quite high GI. That glutinosity, we'll pretend that's a word, is sort of like an indicator of the starchiness and that it's spiky. Brown short grain rice, it turns out, is also relatively low GI. And then what do we got on top of that? We've got jasmine rice. Jasmine rice is also fairly low GI. Basmati rice, on the other hand, no, I got that wrong. Jasmine rice is high GI, even brown jasmine rice, whereas basmati rice is good, whether or not it's the white or the brown rice. They're both good and they're low GI, which is fascinating. And then there's also special rices that have been developed that are white rices that are also low GI, I assume with immense levels of some sort of like scientific, of, you know, selection of specific ones. Same as there's potatoes that are lower carbohydrate potatoes. Anyhow, so if you have someone with diabetes coming over for dinner, basmati rice, way to go. Just a fun fact for you. But yeah, so there's this whole world, once you get diagnosed with diabetes, you sort of get put into kind of like a track or package where you get like appointments with dietitians, appointments with specific nurses who are trained as diabetes educators. And the one who I've interacted has been freaking amazing, incredibly knowledgeable, but also incredibly patient and very compassionate and realistic, which is awesome. You also have to have like appointments with endocrinologists and all of the specialists who deal with all of those like potential complications that could happen. Yeah, so I just thought I'd give you that update because I found it fascinating, and it's also been obviously quite hard work, and it is quite relentless. You don't get a day off from thinking about insulin or calculating things, so there is a large mental load. Speaking of the mental load, down the track we might look at getting an insulin pump. An insulin pump isn't something that like you get if your diabetes is bad enough. You kind of can't have bad enough type 1. It's just binary whether or not you have it. But yeah, an insulin pump, and there's a whole new world of technology out there that, yeah, they can be varying levels of smart that can help reduce that mental load but not like take it away completely. So that's something that once like I get a handle on everything that's going on, might have a look at doing. But yeah, so very interesting. Would not recommend necessarily, but I just thought I would share because it is an interesting world, and as someone who now has type 1 diabetes, I'm pretty passionate about accurate education going out there into the world, which obviously I have a platform, so I'm going to use it. You might also be sitting there wondering, well, how did this happen, right? Because you're like, well, type 1 diabetes you always have heard of as being juvenile or childhood diabetes, and it should only happen to kids. That's just not accurate, apparently. I think the majority of cases are in children still. But yeah, they don't know what causes type 1, which is interesting, or I guess what triggers it. If there's other autoimmune conditions in your family, it's more likely to happen, but not necessarily, obviously. There's a hypothesis that it's caused by trauma. Triggered by trauma. A hypothesis that it could be caused by a virus. And with that sort of hypothesizing, you really know that they aren't too sure. But on the off chance that there's someone out there listening who, you know, is researching this, I would love to chat to you because, you know, I'm quite invested, as you might imagine. But yeah, just one of those things that happen. So I would just like to say, if you have a functioning pancreas, I hope you appreciate it, because I would put money on the table that you probably haven't thought about it in a while or possibly ever. So, you know, shout out to the working pancreases out there, and shout out to all the people who have worked out how to make insulin that works with our bodies, because it's kind of awesome that even though, you know, I'm missing that bit of me, I can replace it, and it involves a bit of effort, but you know, it's better than the alternative. Anyhow, thank you for listening. I hope you're having a wonderful National Science Week. And yeah, if you know anyone who's researching type 1 diabetes in adults, I'd love to chat to them. So take care of yourselves, high five your pancreases, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with perfectly normal programming and no more medical oversharing. So thank you. thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee. Head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.